Many of you are probably aware that we are continuing working our way through the Jesus backstory. The backstory that is the Torah being the first five books of our Bibles, Jesus being the fulfillment of the Torah. In fact, Matthew 5 and 17, Jesus says, "Do not think that I have come to abolish the Torah. I have not come to abolish," he says, "but to fulfill," right? Jesus being the fulfillment of the Torah, the backstory that is the Torah. And so with that today, we come to Numbers, the book of Numbers, a.k.a. Sefer Bamidbar. And with that, Numbers in chapter 25 and dropping down to verse 10. If you're grabbing a pew Bible, page 115, the words will be on the screen behind me. Numbers 25 and picking it up then in verse 10. This is Parsha Pinhas. Parsha Pinhas begins at 25 and 10 and runs through the end of 29. Although if you have a Hebrew Bible, it's actually chapter 30 and verse 1. But in our translations, it ends at 29. Begins here, though, at 25 and 10. It says, we read, Vayedaber Adonai el Moshe l'mor. Probably sounds really familiar to many of you. And said, Yahweh said, the Lord, to Moses, saying, which always begs the question, and what did he say? And then it begins, Pinhas, which is the name of our Parsha. We might say Phinehas. Pinhas ben Eleazar ben Aharon HaKohen, translated Phinehas, son of Eleazar, son of Aaron the priest. And then we get Heshiv et Hamati Me'al b'nei Yisrael, which translates, has turned my anger away from the children of Israel. So Phinehas has turned my anger away from the children of Israel. And so there's anger here, which is interesting in light of last week. It was all about blessing, right? Parsha Balak. It was all about blessing, blessing upon blessing. What was, or what is a pattern, right? A paradigm for doing life. It is blessing, but it is not an inward focused distinction of merit, but it is rather a blessing in the sense of an outward driven and outward flowing offering of benevolence, meaning we are to be an instrument, right? We are to be a channel, right? We are blessed, absolutely, and so that we may be a blessing. And that was fantastic and great and all seemed well. That is until we turn the page to chapter 25, where we get this kind of abrupt shift. We get this kind of dramatic change, moving from blessed to be a blessing. We now get 25 and 1. It says, we read, while Israel was staying in Shittim, the men began to indulge in sexual immorality with Moabite women who invited them to the sacrifices to their god. The people ate the sacrificial meal and bowed down before these gods. So, verse 3, Israel yoked themselves to Baal Peor, and the Lord's anger, it says, burned against them. And it's into then that immorality and that idolatry that really then is the backdrop then to the opening of Parsha Pinhas here, which again, 25 and 10, and said Yahweh to Moses, saying, Phinehas, who is the grandson then, right, of Aaron the priest, has turned my anger away from the children. And so in 25 and 3, we get the Lord's anger is burning against them. And here in 25 and 11, we read that Phinehas has turned my anger, God's anger, away from children of Israel. Now, as always, you can go back. You're welcome to read the whole of the Parsha, but it's here kind of in this intersection of immorality and idolatry that kind of draws us. Keeping in mind here, the bigger picture is not just idolatry and immorality, but it also includes, along with it, our sacrifices, and along with that, our feasts. And it's the combination, it's that combination of immorality and idolatry and sacrifice and feast that then the Jewish scholarship connects back to an earlier story found in Parsha Mishpatim, what is Exodus 32, and what is the story of the golden calf, what in Hebrew is Egel. So picking up that story for just a moment, Exodus 32 and verse 5, we read this, When Aaron saw this, he built an altar in front of the calf, in front of the, it says, Egel, and announced, tomorrow there will be a festival to the Lord. So, verse 6, the next day the people rose early, sacrificed burnt offerings, and presented fellowship offerings. And so again, here we have, there's a feast, and there's there's sacrifices, and we read there's idolatry. And then it says, afterward, they sat down to eat and drink, and Vayakumu Leitzehek, which translates for us, got up to indulge in revelry, to which the renowned rabbi, Solomon ben Isaac, or also known as Rashi, he says there is implied in this term, Leitzehek, besides idolatry, also sexual promiscuity. And so again, there's this connection here between these two stories. Both contain immorality, both contain idolatry, both have sacrifice, both have feast, all of which then raises the question, or at least it does for the Jewish mind, for Jewish scholarship, the question becomes why? Why does the Torah connect these two stories together? And the answer, they tell us, is not so much in their commonality, even though there is that commonality, but it's in the difference. From Rabbi David Foreman, he says, the key to understanding their connection lies in one critical, subtle difference between the two stories. And that difference is in the order. Where in Numbers, we have idolatry leading to sexual immorality, and in Exodus, it is the immorality that leads to the idolatry. And it is in situations like this, writes Rabbi Foreman, it is in situations like this when something is listed twice in Torah, but listed in backwards order from one another, the Torah is trying to tell us that these two things that you might think are different, they are actually the same thing. Reminds me of when, I can't remember, it was 2, 3, 4 weeks ago, we talked about loving God and loving your neighbors yourself, and they're not two separate statements. They are one and the same. They are two ways of saying the same thing. And I think it's the same idea here. Instead of idolatry leading to promiscuity or promiscuity leading to idolatry, he says the Torah is telling us promiscuity and idolatry are both fundamentally expressions of the same thing. Point being, both take what is meant for deep, loving relationship, and we can think intimacy here. What is meant for deep, loving relationship, be it with another person or with God, right? And turns it into something that is being used, that is to be used, maybe even abused. In fact, it's interesting in the ancient world with polytheism, the worship of many gods, worship was not about creating a deep, loving relationship, but it was about winning the gods over. Your worship to the gods was about winning the gods over so that they would give you what you want. And in a similar way, he's saying here, sexual immorality, promiscuity, right? It's not about creating a deep, loving relationship. It's about getting what you want, right? It's about winning, we could say, winning the other over so that the other gives you what you want. Both of which then, both immorality and idolatry then, really devalue the other. They devalue the other. See the other as less than. And it's into that sort of idea, it's that sort of idea then that flows in and through the life and teachings of Jesus. For today, that's Matthew 5. If you're in the Pew Bible, it's 684. Again, the words on the screen behind me. It's interesting, this is just after Jesus has announced at 5:17, right, that he has not come to abolish the Torah, right? He's not come to abolish, we could say, Parsha Pinchas. He has not come to abolish Parsha Balak. He has not come to abolish Parsha Mishpatim, right? But rather, he has come to fulfill. And then straight away, he gives us a number of examples of what this all looks like. And here, on this particular passage, he speaks into that idea of sexual immorality, and with it, I'm going to bring in idolatry, right? Both fundamentally expressions of the same thing. And so Matthew 5:27, Jesus is speaking here. You have heard, he says, you have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. And so he begins by quoting from the Torah, from Parsha Yitro, from Exodus 20. And what really then sits as a foundation for our Parsha, our Parshio today, noting that Jesus, he doesn't stop there, he goes on. He says, but I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Now, to unpack this a bit, there's all sorts of questions. I think the none less than what does it mean to look maybe at a woman, to look at a woman lustfully, beginning with the phrase to look at, which is a translation of the Greek blepo. Blepo, it's this idea of to turn the eyes, to see with the eyes. It carries a sense of to stare or to gaze, to look upon. It also has this other kind of sense that goes along with that. It's this idea of to turn the thoughts, to direct the mind. We can think to consider or maybe to contemplate, to weigh heavily, to imagine, to examine. Point being here, Jesus is not speaking of just, you know, the glancing or the noticing, right? But I tell you that anyone who blepos at, right, anyone who turns the eyes, directs the mind, right, for the purpose to imagine, to examine a woman. And then we read lustfully from the Greek word epithumeo. Epithumeo, it's found in the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation of the Hebrew. And it's found in Parsha Yitro, translating the 10th commandment, and it translates as do not covet. From the scholar Jason Staples, he writes this. He says, in keeping with this distinction, the 10th command, and I think here the emphasis on Jesus' proclamation as well here in Matthew, specifically forbids the action of coveting, perhaps best understood as forbidding fixing one's desire upon obtaining something that is not rightfully one's own. Which is why then Jesus, I think he goes on to rather dramatically say, if your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out, throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. If your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. Now, Jesus is not advocating self-mutilation. He is not advocating self-harm, but rather he is pressing home the seriousness of engaging with others as less than human. He's pressing home the seriousness of engaging others, right? Seeing others, viewing others as nothing more than a mere object. He's pressing home this idea of the seriousness of not seeing someone as merely someone to win over so that you can get what you want, right? And we can even think last week, right? We no longer live, right, this blessing, this outward flowing offering of benevolence. Instead, we flip that all upside wrong, and we engage God and others, right, fundamentally expressions of the same thing, right? We can think idolatry and immorality, and we engage others in a way of devaluing, right? We devalue the other. We think less than. We treat them as objects. There's a song, I don't remember the composer, the singer. It's the idea of, as he put it in his lyrics, it's the idea of moving from, right, loving people and using things to we use people and love things, right? And Jesus, in effect, Jesus is stepping into that kind of an idea here, right? And he invites us, he draws us, in a sense, to move beyond engaging others as less than, to move beyond seeing others as less than, devaluing others, to move from the we could say the pursuit of getting to the pursuit of giving, right? To move toward the creating of deep relationships, both with God and with one another. And so really that invites us to kind of think through this and to process and maybe to ask ourselves, what would it look like to deepen my relationship with God? What would that look like today, this week, as we move into open worship? What would it look like to deepen my relationship with God? We could ask, how is God inviting me to a closer intimacy with Him? Right? Not a God to be won over so that He'll give me what I want. Right? How might I move from a pursuit of getting to a pursuit of giving? What might that look like? Perhaps that might be developing a regular practice of meditation, prayer. Maybe that might be finding and embracing times of solitude, right? Turning off all the noise that surrounds us, being in the moment. Maybe it could involve a practice of confession, a celebration. Maybe it's a practice of giving thanks to Jesus for giving us life, right? The sacrifice that he made. Right? What would it look like to deepen my relationship with God? How is God inviting me to a closer intimacy with him? How might I move from a pursuit of getting to a pursuit of giving? Kind of the difference between not God's life blessing me, but how does my life bless God? And with that, then fundamentally, expressions of the same thing, we can basically ask the same questions. What would it look like to deepen my relationship with others? Right? We can think intimacy. How is God inviting me to a closer intimacy with others? In my relationships with others, how might I move that from that pursuit of getting to that pursuit of giving? And perhaps for that, maybe it's developing a practice or a habit of connecting with others, right? Maybe it's letters, maybe it's visits, phone calls, right? Initiating that sort of connection. Maybe it's turning off all the noises that surround us, right? Being in the moment with another. Maybe it's a sharing of joys and sorrows. Maybe it's an act of service or a gesture of kindness, a listening ear. Maybe it's a word of blessing. So as we sit here for a little bit in the stillness, Psalm 46:10, be still and know that I am God. Let's consider, what would it look like to deepen my relationship with God and with others? How is God inviting me to a closer intimacy with him and others? And how might I move from a pursuit of getting to a pursuit of giving? Pinhas ben Eleazar ben Aharon ha-Kohen, Phinehas son of Eleazar, son of Aaron, the priest, Heshiv et ha-Matzi me'al b'nei Yisrael, Phinehas has turned my anger away from the children of Israel.